want to thank you very, very much for being here. I'm the one with the copy of the Constitution of the United States. Article 2, Section 4. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. I also carry a copy of the United States Declaration of Independence.
You're doing pretty well. Go for it.
Oh, that's okay. There's other people. I'll yield my time to the floor. My question to you, sir, as an educator, how do you best convey all sides of a situation or argument in order to present the most relevant information for people to make informed decisions?
I don't.
Thank you.
I don't. I'm supposed to do my job to a certain extent, and actually that's one of those red herring things that is always thrown out there. There's always two sides. That's such a hackneyed. There's not always two sides, or at least not always two sides we're talking about. And if you think there are, if you're going to insist on that, then get your ass down to Judaic studies and tell them next time they're doing a history course in the Holocaust, they get somebody to represent with equal time the Nazi side. Ain't going to happen, and I agree that it shouldn't happen. So why would there be an expectation on all other things that there would be this co-equal treatment? Aside from which, there's this continuous bombardment by one side in any event, and you get this phenomena where you get, oh, Jean Kilpatrick, is she even still alive? She used to be the Darth Vader of the American right. But you get the Kirkpatrick, you get Madeleine Albright, you get Henry Kissinger, he's wheeled out with his oxygen mask on, and they take it off, and he sounds very German, like Dr. Strangelove, and he pontificates, and they wheel him back. You get a continuous tone of this with Bill O'Reilly intermixed for about 7 months straight, and then for a 14-minute block of time, they bring Noam Chomsky out, and there's a wail from the other side saying, he needed to be balanced. He needed to be counterbalanced by an opposing voice. No. I see my job is to figuring out what the truth of the situation is, insofar as I'm capable of doing it, making that presentation and eliciting challenge from my students, and the only requirement is that I back up my positions. Okay, I got sources, I got particular things that I can substantiate my positions with, and I'll present those, and when they present a countering position, they have to be able to substantiate it too, and it has to be something better than regurgitation of a soundbite they heard on Fox News last night. So am I back over here now?
Yes, you mentioned the sad case of John Kerry. I'm wondering if you'd also comment on Howard Dean. He ran as a peacenik, but now he's head of the Democratic National Committee, and his latest thing that he says is the U.S. has no choice but to stay in Iraq. That's mm-hmm. what Howard Dean says.
Well, I was commenting on John Kerry because he was the last presidential candidate and there was all this furor about he's the alternative when he wasn't. Dean never made it that far. I also commented on John Kerry because I sort of know him personally, okay, so I could speak to certain defects of character that I myself suffered from. But let's not be deluded enough to think I'm a Democrat and could actually speak knowledgeably about these whatever mutant form of life they happen to be. All right, I'll leave the Democrats to worry about Democrats. I don't want to step completely out of that box. So I got no use for any of them. None. There's actually this cute little bumper sticker. Bumper stickers, that's our version of sound bites because we don't have media networks, okay? If voting could change anything, it'd be illegal. So y'all go out and have fun with it. It's essentially a form of masturbation, which can be fun, but probably ought to be done in private. Let me turn this into a public orgy. There it is.
Good evening. My name is Fred Pierce. I'm with the Akeech Tulut Intertribal Society. In your speech and your talk, you mentioned that to resolve the problem, whatever it is, that it required a protracted approach.
Yeah.
Dialogue, whatever. I disagree with you. Whatever the problem is, it is absolutely immediate. With the technology we have today, there is no time for for protracted movements. There's only time for action. If we don't take action, the very Nazism that you are talking about will be instantiated completely in our society. There's no time. If you understand the technology, and I'm a technocrat, we are in deep danger. We understand it. Now my question to you is this. You talked about, you know, Nazism, oppression, all of those symbols of oppression. But I didn't really, it seemed like you were kind of dancing around a subject. You talked about Japan and what happened in Hiroshima. You talked about Iraq. You talked about Native Americans. But you really didn't tell us what the real problem is. And unless we really talk about that real problem, we can't really address the solution. And the problem is the projection of unearned white privilege in the world, period. Period. That is the problem. And if you are an American, you understand what I'm talking about. White, black, or purple, we all share in this place today, every one of us, regardless of our color, share in this unearned white privilege. It must stop, or our children, white and black and red, will be fighting each other in the streets for their perceived rights in the future, and it has to happen now, and we can do it now because we have the power. The choice is, as Chayner said, either we're going to have forever terror, that's what he's promised us because he doesn't see an end to it, or we as Americans can end war as we have known it. That's what's at stake. Thank you very much.
I didn't detect a question in there, so I don't think of what I think about that. Actually, I don't think. I think I kind of said that in a way. Well, I don't think it's quite that simple. Yo, you gave your talk. Now let me respond. Thank you. I think that comes from somewhere, too. We might have to peel that onion a little further. I could speculate on what I think it is. Actually, I think it'd be more than speculation, but I could go to that. I'm not sure whether it's the time, but we got Bible scholars here, I'm sure. So let me try it this way. If you don't have a Bible, and I assume that it probably encompasses several of you, try this. Go to a motel. Okay? They don't mind if you steal it because those evangelicals just keep coming around replacing it. It makes them feel worthy. Okay, so it's free. It's yours to take. Get your Bible. No, I'm not going to really do this to you in any serious fashion. You don't have to go any further than the first page. You can all manage that. Get on the first page, okay? If you got one of those compact editions, you might have to read on into the second page, but I promise it won't go any further than that. And what you're going to find in that first page of Genesis is it's going to tell you that man is created in the image of God. Yeah? Well, we can turn that one around. If that's true, then God must be the image of man. God looks like man. That's how we get that funny guy with a long white beard, all right? That's the godliness of humans on earth, which is a kind of a unique situation. And it's manifested in not only the right, but the obligation for man, by which humanity is meant, to exercise dominion over the rest of nature. And you demonstrate the exercise of dominion by the transformation of nature in such a way as to multiply, grow plentiful, and populate the earth, which can only be done by displacing the rest of nature, that is flora, fauna, and in fact the planet itself. There's the whole process in a nutshell. And what does that say? First of all, a megalomaniac streak that says basically you got a secular God. Man is God in the worldly domain. And God demands that you comport yourself in a way which has you seeing yourself not only apart from but standing above the natural order of things. And that's an extraordinarily alienated conception of self. That's as contrasted to, in one way or another, everything doesn't come out of that particular strain. Every tradition that I know of sees humanity as being an integral part of the natural order with a responsibility, not rights over it, but a responsibility to preserve and maintain it so that it can be handed along to your posterity seven generations in the future. There you have it. Now, if you can get to that conception of self and the society that emerges of it and repeal it, we got no further problem, I think. But one other point. There seemed to be, and it's probably lack of clarity on my part, I wasn't saying we defer action at all. Action's immediate and continuous. I said fixing it's going to take a while. It took it a while to get in this condition. It'll probably take us a while to get it undone, and there's not a pill you can take to fix it, and technology is the problem, not the solution. Other than that, I think we're pretty much on the same page now. I guess we're on this side.
First, I want to thank you for standing up for yourself and not just falling over, because it is very painful to be persecuted, and I'm sure you've had death threats, and I'm sure it's dangerous for you to be anywhere. And right here in California in the high schools, you can't teach anything about Indians. First of all, it's not in the standards. And I've been a history teacher for 20-some years, came back to California in 1998 and said, you're not allowed to talk about Indians. They said, you learned that in fourth grade. They make a mission or a village.
Yeah.
And so I did.
First Californians, right
yeah.
there.
So I go in and I break all the rules that they make, and I teach them about that word genocide and say, that's what happened. But I can't stand for you to just paint the scenario of total despair, because something's got to give, something's got to happen. And I think it comes down to economics. So I have this crazy idea that take the Jefferson idea of every 20 years we get debt relief. And debt relief plus turnover everybody that's up there. Turn them all out. Can you imagine how that would collapse our economic system? Everybody gets debt relief.
Oh, can I can imagine it.
Couldn't you imagine? And people say, if you say that out loud, someone's going to kill you. What do you think about that idea? Got to have a revolution somehow.
You're talking to a guy and asking what I think about that, and this is a guy who goes to sleep at night with a nice smile on my face, imagining Madeleine Albright with her pinkies about this far off the gallows floor, okay? Oh, no lie. It's a really comforting vision and puts me right to sleep. I feel very secure, okay? That doesn't mean I'm going to be the one that hangs her. I just think she ought to be, and it really, you know.
Well, I think we wouldn't have to be all involved with how much we hate everybody if we just saw
I'm not
levels.
Hating her.
Oh,
you got to see what I think about the people I hate. I'm just sort of inclined towards the symmetry of justice.
Well, I think there needs to be a level playing field again, like Jefferson envisioned long time ago.
Well, symmetry of justice is a way of getting there.
Yeah, I think it
okay. would. If you're going to take 17-year-old George Jackson and toss him in a cage at Soledad for 1 year to life for being a driver in a $70 gas station stick-up that he probably didn't even know was occurring at the time and still having there 17 years later, then I don't think Madeleine Albright's toes wiggling off the floor in that context. You know, Michael Milken got 7 years. Right? That's an asymmetry of justice that preserves this kind of dynamic that we're afflicted with. You even that one out, and things don't work this way anymore. So you can make a rap. You can demand what it is that you want in a framing that it really tough for a good hidebound Republican to refute. Now you got them. And I told you, it's in consciousness. You got to approach people where they are, and we're all conditioned to this damn thing about the law is sacrosanct. So there's your lens. Make your argument that way. You'll reach more people, but you catch them on their own contradictions. Sometimes they think they're way out of the box, too. Yeah?
Well, we have a petition.
I mean, I'm invited to Evangelical Christian Home for a chicken dinner just beyond the bridge in Louisville, Kentucky, anytime I'm passing through on my way to Atlanta. And this is a guy that started out, let's say, in a different position. Sometimes you engage them in their own terms. You know, I got another rabid right winger that, how was it he insulted me, or thought he was? Something about I took my degree from the Universal Life Ministry, makes it worth more than yours. I said, huh, that's a funny thing. I've been a Universal Life minister since 1973, and all of a sudden we were friends. It's true. Don't let them have a moving target. Try to reach people where they are. You can bring some over, not all. I'm a registered libertarian. Hell, I'm way to the right of those left-wingers out there reading names. That's fact. I got a credential.
And I want to thank you very, very much for being here. I'm the one with the copy of the Constitution of the United States. Article 2, Section 4. The President, Vice President, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, and other high crimes and misdemeanors. I also carry a copy of the United States Declaration of Independence.
You're doing pretty well. Go for it.
Oh, that's okay. There's other people. I'll yield my time to the floor. My question to you, sir, as an educator, how do you best convey all sides of a situation or argument in order to present the most relevant information for people to make informed decisions?
I don't.
Thank you.
I don't. I'm supposed to do my job to a certain extent, and actually that's one of those red herring things that is always thrown out there. There's always two sides. That's such a hackneyed. There's not always two sides, or at least not always two sides we're talking about. And if you think there are, if you're going to insist on that, then get your ass down to Judaic studies and tell them next time they're doing a history course in the Holocaust, they get somebody to represent with equal time the Nazi side. Ain't going to happen, and I agree that it shouldn't happen. So why would there be an expectation on all other things that there would be this co-equal treatment? Aside from which, there's this continuous bombardment by one side in any event, and you get this phenomena where you get, oh, Jean Kirkpatrick, is she even still alive? She used to be the Darth Vader of the American right. But you get the Kirkpatrick, you get Madeleine Albright, you get Henry Kissinger. He's wheeled out with his oxygen mask on, and they take it off, and he sounds very German, like Dr. Strangelove, and he pontificates, and they wheel him back. You get a continuous tone of this with Bill O'Reilly intermixed for about 7 months straight, and then for a 14-minute block of time, they bring Noam Chomsky out, and there's a wail from the other side saying, he needed to be balanced. He needed to be counterbalanced by an opposing voice. No. I see my job is figuring out what the truth of the situation is, insofar as I'm capable of doing it, making that presentation and eliciting challenge from my students, and the only requirement is that I back up my positions. Okay, I got sources, I got particular things that I can substantiate my positions with, and I'll present those, and when they present a countering position, they have to be able to substantiate it too, and it has to be something better than regurgitation of a soundbite they heard on Fox News last night. So am I back over here now?
Yes, you mentioned the sad case of John Kerry. I'm wondering if you'd also comment on Howard Dean. He ran as a peacenik, but now he's head of the Democratic National Committee, and his latest thing that he says is the U.S. has no choice but to stay in Iraq. That's what Howard Dean says.
Well, I was commenting on John Kerry because he was the last presidential candidate, and there was all this furor about he's the alternative when he wasn't. Dean never made it that far. I also commented on John Kerry because I sort of know him personally, okay, so I could speak to certain defects of character that I myself suffered from. But let's not be deluded enough to think I'm a Democrat and could actually speak knowledgeably about these whatever mutant form of life they happen to be. All right, I'll leave the Democrats to worry about Democrats. I don't want to step completely out of that box. So I got no use for any of them. None. There's actually this cute little bumper sticker. Bumper stickers, that's our version of sound bites because we don't have media networks, okay? If voting could change anything, it'd be illegal. So y'all go out and have fun with it. It's essentially a form of masturbation, which can be fun, but probably ought to be done in private. Let me turn this into a public orgy. There it is.
Good evening. My name is Fred Pierce. I'm with the Akich Talut Intertribal Society. In your speech and your talk, you mentioned that to resolve the problem, whatever it is, that it required a protracted approach.
Yeah.
Dialogue, whatever. I disagree with you. ideas, whatever the problem is, it is absolutely immediate. With the technology we have today, there is no time for protracted movements. There's only time for action. If we don't take action, the very Nazism that you are talking about will be instantiated completely in our society. There's no time. If you understand the technology, and I'm a technocrat, we are in deep danger. We understand that. And my question to you is this. You talked about, you know, Nazism, oppression, all those symbols of oppression. But I didn't really, it seemed like you were kind of dancing around a subject. You talked about Japan and what happened in Hiroshima. You talked about Iraq. You talked about Native Americans. But you really didn't tell us what the real problem is. And unless we really talk about that real problem, we can't really address the solution. And the problem is the projection of unearned white privilege in the world, period. Period. That is the problem. And if you are an American, you understand what I'm talking about. White, black, or purple, we all share in this place today, every one of us, regardless of our color, share in this unearned white privilege. It must stop, or our children, white and black and red, will be fighting each other in the streets for their perceived rights in the future, and it has to happen now, and we can do it now because we have the power. The choice is, as Chayner said, either we're going to have forever terror, that's what he's promised us because he doesn't see an end to it, or we as Americans can end war as we have known it. That's what's at stake. Thank you very much.
I didn't detect a question in there, so I don't think of what I think about that. Actually, I don't think. I think I kind of said that in a way. Well, I don't think it's quite that simple. Yo, 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 you gave your talk. Now let me respond. Thank you. I think that comes from somewhere, too. We might have to peel that onion a little further. I could speculate on what I think it is. Actually, I think it'd be more than speculation, but I could go to that. I'm not sure whether it's the time. But we got Bible scholars here, I'm sure. So let me try it this way. If you don't have a Bible, and I assume that it probably encompasses several of you, try this. Go to a motel. Okay? They don't mind if you steal it because those evangelicals just keep coming around replacing it. Makes them feel worthy. Okay? So it's free. It's yours to take. Get your Bible. No, I'm not going to really do this to you in any serious fashion. You don't have to go any further than the first page. You can all manage that. Get on the first page, okay? If you got one of those compact editions, you might have to read on into the second page, but I promise it won't go any further than that. And what you're going to find in that first page of Genesis is it's going to tell you that man is created in the image of God. Yeah? Well, we can turn that one around. If that's true, then God must be the image of man. God looks like man. That's how we get that funny guy with a long white beard, all right? That's the godliness of humans on earth, which is a kind of a unique situation. And it's manifested in not only the right, but the obligation for man, by which humanity is meant to exercise dominion over the rest of nature. And you demonstrate the exercise of dominion by the transformation of nature in such a way as to multiply, grow plentiful, and populate the earth, which can only be done by displacing the rest of nature, that is flora, fauna, and in fact the planet itself. There's the whole process in a nutshell. And what does that say? First of all, a megalomaniac streak that says basically you got a secular God. Man is God in the worldly domain. And God demands that you comport yourself in a way which has you seeing yourself not only apart from but standing above the natural order of things, and that's an extraordinarily alienated conception of self. That's as contrasted to, in one way or another, everything doesn't come out of that particular strain. Every tradition that I know of sees humanity as being an integral part of the natural order with a responsibility, not rights over it, but a responsibility to preserve and maintain it so that it can be handed along to your posterity 7 generations in the future. There you have it. Now, if you can get to that conception of self and the society that emerges of it and repeal it, we got no further problem, I think. But one other point, there seemed to be, and it's probably lack of clarity on my part, I wasn't saying we defer action at all. Action's immediate and continuous. I said fixing it's going to take a while. It took it a while to get in this condition. It'll probably take us a while to get it undone, and there's not a pill you can take to fix it, and technology is the problem, not the solution. Other than that, I think we're pretty much on the same page now. I guess we're on this side.
First, I want to thank you for standing up for yourself and not just falling over, because it is very painful to be persecuted, and I'm sure you've had death threats, and I'm sure it's dangerous for you to be anywhere. And right here in California, in the high schools, you can't teach anything about Indians. First of all, it's not in the standards. And I've been a history teacher for 20-some years, came back to California in 1998 and said, you're not allowed to talk about Indians. They said, you learned that in fourth grade. They make a mission or a village.
Yeah.
And so I did.
First Californians, right?
Yeah.
There.
So I go in and I break all the rules that they make, and I teach them about that word genocide and say that's what happened. But I can't stand for you to just paint the scenario of total despair, because something's got to give, something's got to happen. And I think it comes down to economics. So I have this crazy idea that take the Jefferson idea of every 20 years we get debt relief. And debt relief plus turnover everybody that's up there. Turn them all out. Can you imagine how that would collapse our economic system? Everybody gets debt relief.
Oh, can I can imagine it.
Couldn't you imagine? And people say, if you say that out loud, someone's going to kill you. What do you think about that idea? Got to have a revolution somehow.
You're talking to a guy and asking what I think about that, and this is a guy who goes to sleep at night with a nice smile on my face, imagining Madeleine Albright with her pinkies about this far off the gallows floor, okay? Oh, no lie. It's a really comforting vision and puts me right to sleep. I feel very secure, okay? That doesn't mean I'm going to be the one that hangs her. I just think she ought to be, and it really, you know.
Well, I think we wouldn't have to be all involved with how much we hate everybody if we just saw
I'm not
levels.
Hating her.
Oh,
you got to see what I think about the people I hate. I'm just sort of inclined towards the symmetry of justice.
Well, I think there needs to be a level playing field again, like Jefferson envisioned long time ago.
Well, symmetry of justice is a way of getting there.
Yeah, I think it
okay.
would.
If you're going to take 17-year-old George Jackson and toss him in a cage at Soledad for 1 year to life for being a driver in a $70 gas station stick-up that he probably didn't even know was occurring at the time, and still having there 17 years later, then I don't think Madeleine Albright's toes wiggling off the floor in that context. You know, Michael Milken got 7 years. Right? That's an asymmetry of justice that preserves this kind of dynamic that we're afflicted with. You even that one out, and things don't work this way anymore. So you can make a rap. You can demand what it is that you want in a framing that it really tough for a good hidebound Republican to refute. Now you got them. And I told you, it's in consciousness. You got to approach people where they are, and we're all conditioned to this damn thing about the law is sacrosanct. So there's your lens. Make your argument that way. You'll reach more people, but you catch them on their own contradictions. Sometimes they think they're way out of the box, too. Yeah?
Well, we have a petition.
I mean, I'm invited to Evangelical Christian Home for a chicken dinner just beyond the bridge in Louisville, Kentucky, anytime I'm passing through on my way to Atlanta. And this is a guy that started out, let's say, in a different position. Sometimes you engage them in their own terms. You know, I got another rabid right winger that, how was it he insulted me, or thought he was? Something about I took my degree from the Universal Life Ministry, makes it worth more than yours. I said, huh, that's a funny thing. I've been a Universal Life minister since 1973, and all of a sudden we were friends. It's true. Don't let them have a moving target. Try to reach people where they are. You can bring some over, not all. I'm a registered libertarian. Hell, I'm way to the right of those left-wingers out there reading names. That's fact. I got credentials to prove it. I made a nominating speech at the Libertarian Convention. Guess what? We pulled some libertarians over on his side of the equation by approaching them. I don't think this is where you started out, but on the other hand, you started want to spark my fantasies. My fantasies are I can reach gearheads, I can reach libertarians, I can sit down with Posse Comitatus and have a talk, and they end up seeing things a little different. And by the way, I agree with them in terms of centralized authority being an abomination, and they want to abolish it, and we can agree on that. Now, what can we work out? Ended up in a bunker at Yellow Thunder Camp in 1982 with a couple of birchers that have been trying to kill, not me necessarily personally, but people on my side of the equation barely 5 years before on Pine Ridge Reservation. They had figured out in the meantime, government's a good organizer for you, okay? Really is, if you can frame it in terms that people can relate to. They had a thing up there in South Dakota they call the Etsy Pipeline, which is a project to draw the aquifer water out from under the entire area in order to slurry coal all the way from the Wyodak mine in northern Wyoming to Wisconsin. And all of a sudden, these ranchers, who were the Birchers, discovered that they were going to be living in the Sahara Desert in the same position as the Indians, and their view of the world changed real fast. And all of a sudden, instead of being out there shooting in, they were in there with us pointing guns out. And I kind of liked that result. So, that's been the most amusing part of this. Straight down the line for me is getting called a Marxist. And I don't know who should be more appalled by that. I mean, the Marxists tend to be appalled, although, okay. Harpo Marxist, maybe, but the only kind of Marxist I could possibly be considered, and I don't even like Harpo enough to sit down and watch him. So, what can you imagine? No, that's just it. That was a little exercise. You pegged that. What can you imagine? And that's how it works. That's the consciousness. What can you imagine and how can you harness to the reality as you encounter at any given moment in order to change what you don't like into something constructive? And that's why it's a process. But that, brother, is action. Okay, action takes a lot of different forms. It's not just on the barricades and bombs and rifles and stuff. In fact, that's just like a war. You in a war, what do they call that? 6 weeks of tedium punctuated by 15 seconds of raw fear. That's how it works. It's work. It's work in deploying imagination and intellect in ways that can transform the reality that you reject into the opposite of itself. That's a dialectical premise. And that is action. That's how we do political work. But you cannot come up with a set piece recipe that explains in righteous terms what the proper view of the world is for all people at all circumstances, and that universalizing, totalizing kind of discourse that alienates people, and it doesn't take you anywhere. So I'll talk to you one way. I'll talk to those guys outside, which I would talk to them if they were interested in talking in a completely different way. When I'm home, I talk to people way different way. And when I go up north, I talk another way still. And a whole big part of it is learning from people what it is that gives meaning to their lives so that I can figure out how to relate to them, because it has to connect to something in my own. There it is. When we write people off as just being rednecks and of no utility, potential, or real, then we're playing the same game that I was talking about was causing people to fly airplanes into buildings, and we're no better than they are.
Churchill, my name's Antonio Nunez. I'm from San Jose State Mecha, here to support the brothers and the sisters here. And I came here with a partner of mine named Agustin Buelna, and we spent two or so weeks or whatnot at the Navajo Nation a couple years back at the Four Corners and between Arizona.
You remember where you were?
Yes, I was.
No, but you remember like Chinle?
Oh, the exact camp? I apologize for that, Professor. I don't remember the exact location. Okay. But I wanted to ask you regarding my impression was that reservation was practically, it was just like a large jail in my point of view. The poverty was terrible. The unemployment rate was above 50%. And I just wanted to ask you, other than these casinos that are springing up in California as a remedy to the so-called starvation towards the Native Americans that has been official U.S. policy towards the reservations throughout the nation, how do you see the American Indians helping improve their economy and their lives, basically, because what I saw was horrendous.
Oh, you saw a low unemployment rate for a res, bro. Okay, go Pine Ridge next time. It's been running in the bottom 90th percentile for the last 50 years. Poorest county in the country, Shannon County on Pine Ridge. So it gets a lot worse than Navajo. But that has to do with colonial subordination. In Navajo, it has to do with having all the land that was usable taken out from under them in New Mexico and getting systematically shoved west for a period of time onto Red Rock and so forth, okay? But the colonial situation works two ways, subjugation of the basic people and the creation of a comprador elite for pocket change that will administer to the system that extracts that which could make their lives different and funnel it into the quality of life of a dominating society. Yeah.
Thank you, Professor, and hopefully you can speak one day at San Jose State. Thank you.
I go where I'm invited, so take that as a cue. I'm going to take a couple more, like a couple more on each side, which comes out to be four. And I don't know who over here is actually in the line and who's not, so that's just kind of an arbitrary number. Well, it's not that arbitrary. It has to do with my sense of how much longer I can continue to be coherent. Of course, I can do lots of incoherent things if you like, but.
Hi, I'm Jen with the Watsonville Brown Berets. My question is this. If you were to recommend three books to a literate, politically aware high school dropout, what would they be?
To a literate,
politically aware high school dropout, kid who's not into high school, dropped out.
Well, I'm going to just, this will give you some room to run in. Walk into a bookstore, take a dart, throw it at a shelf that says Noam Chomsky, and take your, you know, let that pick one. Okay? If you can find it, this may be difficult because it's the same title, but there's about six different editions, and they're different every time. If you can find the original edition of Rudy Acuna's Occupied America, it's dynamite. Okay? And then there's this guy Churchill that I like a lot. Depending on the student, whether they want more internal or more external focus.
No, pacifism as pathology would probably work right now. Thanks.
That's a fun ride. So that puts me over here.
My name's Dijon.
Nice
Bain.
Shirt.
Huh?
Nice shirt.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
My name is Dijon Banks. I'm Anishinaabe from Leech Lake and Pomo from Robinson Rancheria. My uncle is Dennis Banks. And one of the controversial questions, though, in a large part in the AIM community and Indian community is, are you really Indian? And do you have evidence? Do you have a roll number or anything?
You ask a dog for a pedigree, crowd. Yeah, I do, and DJ knows it, and you can get off this shtick. He's running with Bill O'Reilly, and it's really disgusting to see him descend to that level.
Oh, I'm not speaking on part of Dennis. This is for me.
Well, that's where it came from, and he signed the paper along with Vernon and Clyde. And we're sitting here talking about what we're talking about, and you want to talk about who my grandmother was. Well, my grandmother's who she was, and I've been through that three times, and I'm not going to dignify your question with a response. Go ask somebody else about their pedigree. Bye. That is, actually, I will say something else. A virulent display of a deeply colonized mentality. You treat yourself like livestock and then demand that others do the same as if it was a badge of honor. You want a roll card or you want a goddamn number on my arm? Which are we going to use as a standard here? The Eichmann standard? The one drop rule? What? Because that's not your tradition. That's nobody's tradition, roll cards and enrollments. Nowhere on this continent. That's a federal tradition. And if you want to work for the feds, at least get paid. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah.
I wanted to thank you for coming to our campus. And I also wanted to ask you where you get your strength and your courage from. Where do you get your strength and your courage from? Is it from the people? Are you a spiritual man?
Yeah, but that's, I don't think where I get this particular thing from. I don't know. I mean, it's all bound up in a lot of anger.
Yeah.
That's a piece of it, and that's not very spiritual, but that's a piece too. I get my balance. Balance is what allows me to continue, but it's not what propels. So I probably have to say the anger and, in a way, an optimism, a hope that things can be different. There it is.
Thank you.
I'm getting old and sentimental in a certain way. This never used to be true, but the children make me cry. They really do. And then I can't stop. I see little hopeful faces. And I know what happens to that hope in this context. And I can't stand to just accept that that's the reality of it. So, okay.
We have
what? Okay. Thank you.